Welcome to a new episode of The Brand Called You. Today we have a really accomplished lady, Nirupama Subramaniam, on our show. Nirupama, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Pleasure to be here.
Nirupama is a consultant, facilitator, coach. She's the co-founder of Glow. And most importantly for me, she's an author. She's an MBA from XLRI and she's worked for Citibank and Genpact. Nirupama, tell me a little bit about your early careers, some of your learnings.
Sure. So, you know, I did my MBA 25 years ago from Excel, and at that point of time, I thought I wanted to be in a bank, in a, you know, typical corporate job. Mm. So I joined Citibank in the corporate banking. So in the early 90s, banking was one of the most important and coveted places to be in. So I joined Citibank. I worked there for about 4 years. It was very interesting, transitioning from campus to corporate. A lot of learning, especially in terms of how to navigate the corporate world, understanding banking. And interestingly, some of those learnings found their way into my first novel as well. You know, the first novel is slightly autobiographical, so I think it gave me a lot of input for that. Yeah. So I worked with Citibank for about 4.5 years, and then I realized banking is not the place where I wanted to spend the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it is not easy to give up a known brand, a large organization, and Citibank was great if you wanted to be in banking.
Sure.
And a nice salary as well, a lot of perks along with that, but I did not find that I had the skills nor the aptitude to be in core banking. Mm-hmm. Then I started looking for what I could do. All the opportunities I was getting was in banking. Mm-hmm. And so I made a complete transition. In fact, my batchmates in XLRI say that I kind of have, you know, transitioned to the other side, because XLRI is known for their HR.
Yeah.
So I moved from a business management finance person, mm-hmm. in fact, into the space of learning and development.
Okay.
So after Citibank, I almost took a leap of faith and joined a small organization called Achieve Global.
Okay.
It's an American training and consulting company, and they were setting up operations in India. Mm-hmm. They were looking for somebody to head and lead the Delhi office.
Okay.
And, I just happened to meet the CEO, Mike, and I think he also took a leap of faith, and he asked me to join as a general mm-hmm. manager.
Okay.
In those days, we didn't have the word startup, but that's pretty much what it was, minus the technology. Mm-hmm. So what I did was everything from finding the office space to finding clients mm-hmm. to building a team. Mm-hmm. So that was a great experience in terms of, how do you really grow and develop a business.
Correct.
And huge learning. So I went from Citibank, which was a very well-known brand, to Achieve Global. And I would do cold calls to corporate clients, and they would say, I was in Delhi, Ajib, kya? Kahan se bol rahe? You know, so complete transition from a very safe corporate structure to an unknown kind of a brand and work. But I realized this is what I really enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. I love the process of creating learning experiences, delivering the workshop. So I really enjoyed that.
Fantastic.
And then I took a break and then moved on to becoming an independent learning and development professional.
Wonderful. So before I talk to you about your three avatars, when I was reading about you, you said you believe in self-awareness and its impact on capability enhancement. Help me understand this.
Sure. So that forms in many ways the crux of what I do in terms of coaching and leadership development. So the idea is, if you know more about yourself, there are layers of awareness, you will understand what they call in typical interview parlance, strengths and weaknesses, right? Or what is your potential and what are the things that come in the way of your potential? And that becomes a doorway for enhancing capability. So you're also a coach. So I know, you know, I'm sure you're aware that in coaching, we say the person, your client, has all the answers and resources.
Correct.
It's really about tapping into that and making the person more self-aware. And thereby getting the answers to the questions.
Okay.
So that's really the philosophy of what I do as a facilitator as well.
Wonderful.
So it's not so much as a lecture or, you know, teaching a concept, as enabling a person to understand what it is that they need to do and which is the area they need to grow in.
Wonderful. Okay, understand. So let's talk about your first avatar as the co-founder of Glow, which is the growing leadership of women.
Yes.
Tell me about this initiative.
Yes. So Glow is a recent initiative. And there are two reasons really why I came to set up Glow. One is my own personal experience as a woman in the corporate sector. So many years ago, when my daughter was born in 2002, I went through a bit of a tough time managing you know, what they call the family as well as my work. So I love my work. It was very demanding. But my daughter also fell ill at that time. And, you know, I lived with a lot of guilt that, you know, I was not there to look after her. So I did go through a period of, you know, a bit of a struggle, feeling like a failure. Mm-hmm. And I wondered why it was not so easy for women to be able to manage both. Mm-hmm. And there was, you know, no external person to blame, but it's really me and my own biases, correct, what I grew up with, mm-hmm, where I felt that, you know, I had to kind of take a backseat, if mm-hmm I were to use the word, and, you know, bring up my child. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, the break was wonderful. It was a gift. Mm. But I still kind of had the feeling that, you know, there was some kind of restriction that women went through.
Sure.
Secondly, in the course of my professional career as a leadership development facilitator, I found and I saw there were very few women in senior level roles. Mm. So I would do workshops where there were only men. You know, top teams were 98%, 90% male.
Correct.
Then I started speaking to some of the women and mm understanding the challenges they face mm in our context. So, which is when I felt that there was a big need to create a safe space for women to come together, to correct learn, to grow, deepen self-awareness mm in an environment where they could connect with people who had similar stories,
okay,
share those stories and build upon the learnings from that experience. Mm. So it's not that women required dramatically different skills, but they did require spaces where they could connect and explore and share
mm-hmm
and through self-awareness build their capabilities,
okay,
which is why GLOW was born. And our mission is really to enable women to find success and fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
This other aim is to develop cultures that are more inclusive so that women feel included,
correct,
and heard.
Correct.
So that's the reason, you know, why GLOW came about.
Okay. And you mentioned that, you know, you are helping people discover their potential.
Yes.
Or women discover their potential. Give me an example, without taking names, mm, of something significant you have achieved with someone, maybe.
Okay, so let me take maybe a particular case mm of you know, a woman who I have been coaching and mentoring. She's a senior, you know, she was a senior professional in a large organization, mm-hmm, and she was facing certain challenges in terms of her own biases. Mm. She had got feedback that she was not assertive, mm, and she wanted to reach a particular level. She wanted to become a vice president by a particular level.
Okay.
She felt that she was too emotional at mm work. She was not able to handle certain aspects of the team.
Okay.
And I had a long coaching engagement with her. Mm. And the result of that, and not only that, she's an amazing woman. She did a lot of work, where she was able to reach her goal of becoming the vice president 3 years before what she had set out.
Okay.
And interestingly, the self-awareness helped her to go on her own journey.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has now become an entrepreneur.
Wonderful.
So that gives a lot of, you know, satisfaction.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing we are doing, which I haven't mentioned, is we have a not-for-profit, family not-for-profit, okay, called My Daughter's Precious,
okay,
which is started by my daughter and my husband. And, you know, we are a part of that. And we work with young girls who are in college.
Okay.
From underserved backgrounds. Mm-hmm. These are people, these are young girls who don't have the benefit mm-hmm of, you know, the upbringing and the connections that we have. And we've started a mentorship program in GLOW, okay, whereby we connect some of these girls to urban educated women, experienced women. And the brief is really to help to bring
wonderful
out the potential of these girls. And through My Daughter's Precious, we also crowdfund and provide scholarships for these girls.
Okay.
And the girl whom we first supported and, you know, who I've been mentoring has got a white collar job.
Amazing.
And she's the first person in her community to be a graduate and, you know, get a job which is not that of a domestic help.
Fantastic. That's so wonderful.
That, yeah. That's
so satisfying. So one more question relating to GLOW.
Yeah.
This is for women in general. And this is on gender balance. You
yes
know, you're doing a lot for women.
Yes.
And, you know, India is one of the few countries where women have always been respected. But somehow, the gender balance at work
yes
is completely warped.
True.
What are your thoughts on this? And how can we expedite this?
Yes. So, that's one of the areas that we are working on.
Yeah.
So, a latest report actually by World Economic Forum says mm-hmm complete gender parity will happen only up to 257
my
years.
Mm-hmm.
257 years, right? So that's a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the reasons why we started GLOW was actually to address this issue.
Okay.
So many organizations, including a client I'm currently working with, say we get enough women at entry levels, 40% in, you know, especially large tech, ideas, mm-hmm, companies. Entry level, you know, is not bad. But somehow there is a lot of leakage in the pipeline, especially in the middle level. So now they call it the broken rung, right? Mm-hmm. So from moving from entry level to middle and senior management is where the gap is. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we're looking to address with GLOW,
okay,
which is how do we support women to make the choices that suit them?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's perfectly fine if some of the women say that, I do want to take a step back. Mm-hmm. I did that myself, mm-hmm, and say, you know, devote some time to the family.
Correct.
But is that a choice? Are they doing it, you know, out of choice? Is there resentment attached, mm-hmm, with it? So that's one area we are looking at. Secondly, we're partnering with organizations to ease the transition back. When women come back after maternity leave, how can we support them, you know, to get back into the work?
And retain their seniority,
manage this balance, this delicate balance, mm-hmm, between family. And, you know, no matter what you say, of course, we do respect women, but what we call the domestic load,
mm-hmm,
is predominantly taken up by the women, correct, right? The household, yeah, and the children. In fact, I have women clients who say, I get up in the morning and cook. As I pack my child's, you know, tiffin, I send him or her off to school. Then I set out and I come back in the evening and make sure all of that is done. Mm. Of course, men are changing. They are coming, yeah, you know, if I will say, they are, you know, standing up and for their women and taking care, but still a long way to go.
I agree. And then I've always said women are much, much better multitaskers than men. Much better.
Well, my feeling in that is multitasking is, you know, a high standard that we have to live
up
to.
I agree.
And I think that's one way of making sure women are constantly juggling.
Correct.
If I tell a lot of my women clients that don't multitask, do one thing at a time and focus on that, correct, and do that well and delegate.
Yes.
Right? Delegate as much as possible,
yeah,
instead of thinking that I have to carry everything by myself.
That's very well said. So, Nirupama, let me move on to the next other, which is with you as a coach, consultant, and a facilitator. For our clients, help me understand what is coaching and why is it becoming more relevant in our country?
Okay. So, of course, there are many definitions of coaching.
Yeah.
I'm sure you would know that as well. So, I look at coaching as really an interactive process of helping the person get greater self-awareness and unlock their potential,
mm-hmm,
by identifying what is coming in the way, overcoming that, and also tapping into their own resources to enhance their, mm-hmm, potential. So at a very basic level, it's a guided conversation,
okay,
where the coach acts as a guide, mm-hmm, not an advisor or a consultant, but merely a guide to show the path to help the person get their own ahas, mm-hmm, and therefore move from, if I were to call, not knowing to knowing and doing something about it, and also holding them accountable for certain actions. So,
and why is it that, you know, in India, for example, coaching was traditionally, when I was in the corporate world, done by a godfather in the company, or in a family environment by a family elder.
Yes.
And now both sets of scenarios, people are saying, let me get a qualified or a certified coach.
That's good to know. Yes.
You know, what is changing?
So I think those roles are what we call more mentoring roles, right? Which is more guiding the person from a place of experience. Correct. I've been there. I've done that.
Yeah.
Let me show you the way. What's happening now is the old ways no longer work. Right? What worked for a generation earlier, like my father or mother, is not working today.
Correct.
Right? You see, there is this word which we often use, disruption, all around.
Mm-hmm.
Technology has changed the way we function. Things are changing at a rapid pace.
Yeah.
So I can't fall back on old templates. What worked 35 years ago is not going to work. You know, whether it's in the personal space or professional space. Let me talk about the urban environment. Children are growing up very differently.
With
a lot of exposure.
Right.
So what... you know, the techniques that my mother used with me are not going to work with my daughter.
Correct.
I have to be constantly adapting and changing. Cool. Similarly, the role of this venerable advisor whose word is law, you know, is no longer true.
Correct.
Because those people are also struggling.
Yeah.
So I have a client whom I'm working with, a large public sector bank, and people have been working for 30 years doing the same job. And it's very unnerving for them when these new millennials come into work.
Yeah.
Because they cannot use the same strategies which their boss used with them,
correct,
to motivate and engage the millennials.
Correct.
So I think because of that, there is a shift towards what we call professional coaching, where the coach is not giving you a ready-made solution. Because, hey, there may not be a ready-made solution for you, but allowing you to develop the skills to figure out your own solution.
Absolutely. Well said.
Which is why I think coaching, at least in the last few years, has become popular. It's gaining traction because of this nature of constantly changing and adapting to the environment, which is such an important aspect of the world today.
Correct. So one more question on coaching, and that is from the perspective of a coachee.
Yes.
What should an individual looking for a coach look for in a coach?
Well, I think one thing which is, if I were to say, maybe call it the three C's. Competence, right? Which is what I call the ability, right? Which is why we have certification. So I know I recently got my PCC certification for ICF. Not that it makes a significant difference in the way I coach, but it kind of reassures the person that this person is competent. They've got a certain number of coaching hours. So that's what I would say, which is the competence. The second would be the chemistry, which is, I think there has to be some kind of a connect. You don't have to be from the same background. You don't have to be from, exactly the same context.
Yeah.
But there has to be, I think, a certain connect that I feel comfortable talking to and, you know, being with this person. That's the second.
Okay.
And the third one, I would say, is credibility. Which is slightly different from competence in the sense that you quickly have to establish that you can keep confidences, you are engaging in the process with the interest of the client, and you're able to have that, you know, connectedness. That is also, I would say, a part of credibility. So look for competence, chemistry, and credibility when you look for a coach.
Well done. Well said. Well said. So let's move to your third of that, which is as an author and as a writer. Tell me about both your books a little bit, and then we'll ask you a few more questions on writing.
Sure. So writing was something I was always interested in. So when I was very young, I would go for these writing competitions and, you know, I would, you know, win the prizes. Somehow I never thought of writing as a career. Because in the 90s, nobody, you know, thought of writing as a career unless you became a journalist, which was not something I wanted to do. So writing was kind of fell in the realm of, you know, like a little hobby early on. But interestingly, that's one of the reasons, you know, why I feel glad I took a break, is when I took a break after my daughter was born, I reconnected with my writing. I started writing more articles. I started contributing. Economic Times in those days used to have a humor column. I started writing and publishing there. So I connected and gained more confidence as a writer. And then fiction in India was taking off then.
Right?
There was what we call the commercial fiction, which is not your Salman Rushdie's and Vikram Seth's of the world, but books that, you know, or, you know, normal people, not normal, well, people would like to read
the
and connect.
Chetan Bhagat's
of the world. So I felt, okay, maybe this is a time I could start writing. And I thought about what I wanted to write about. And what came easily and naturally to me was, in a way, kind of my own life experiences, especially as I shared with you my experience in banking. So I started, you know, writing my first novel, which is called Keep the Change. It's commercial fiction. It's a light, funny book. So I, because I was writing humor at that space of time, so humor seemed to come more naturally to me. And yeah, I started writing Keep the Change somewhere in 2008 to 2009. And yeah, it just... Luckily, the, you know, took off, the book flowed, loosely based on, you know, banking experience. But it's not autobiographical in sense. The character Damayanti, of course, comes from a traditional South Indian family. She moves to Bombay. So I took some of that, but of course, it's not my story. But I used a lot of what I saw around me into that. So that was my first book. It was published in 2010. It became a bestseller. Did extremely well in terms of sales. So I got a little more confidence as a writer. So I moved to saying I'm an author. Then I wrote my second book, Intermission, which was published in 2012. This time I actually moved away from the genre of pure commercial fiction, you know, chick lit as it is called, because I realized what inspires me to write is the world around me. You know, I'm not somebody who writes in a particular genre, but Gurgaon is actually the main subject of my second book, Intermission. It's about life in a high-rise condominium in Gurgaon and the relationships and the connections between people there. And it's a love story It's got multiple, you know, plots as well. So okay. That was my second novel, okay. Intermission.
Okay.
Then obviously I've taken a long break and I was looking for subjects that would interest me.
Right.
I did start writing something in fiction, but I was not very connected to it. So what I'm working on now is a non-fiction.
Okay. Book.
Almost like a convergence of what I'm doing in the women's space and my love for writing and psychology. So that's the book fantastic. I'm researching and working on now about women and power.
Fantastic, fantastic. So let's move to a few questions to you personally. You know, my first question to you is that are there any people who have had an influence on your life? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
Primary influencers definitely have been my parents, right? So right from the beginning, interestingly, my father was in the IAS. He's no more, passed away 10 years ago. My mother was an economics teacher and professor in a college. Really early influences, I think, still stay very strong. Yeah. And I didn't want to go into the IAS. I didn't want to become a teacher. But interestingly, I find now what I'm really passionate about is facilitation, coaching, and service, right? So somehow that comes back to me.
Okay.
So I think what I really learned from my mother is a drive for excellence, the importance of being organized. And she still says, you know, whatever you do, make sure you do it really well and you're really good at that. So still a very strong influence. In fact, she's the one who keeps urging me to finish my book quickly. And from my father, I learned a lot about the importance of learning, compassion. So he was a very learned man. He used to write as well. So that's something I've got from both my parents. And the importance of service and giving back.
Okay.
So I think those have been my primary influences. Wow. And of course, of late, I must mention, my husband has been a very strong influence. I think we both are quite different. And therefore, I have a lot to learn from him in terms of just the drive, enthusiasm, stepping out, the importance of connecting with people and forming those critical relationships. Not just settling for one thing, but giving free rein to your imagination and exploration.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's, I think, wonderful. The people closest to me, luckily, have been great sources of influencing me in a positive
that's
way.
Wonderful. So, you know, Nirupa, after so much success you've seen already, and I'm sure there'll be lots more coming up, what would be three words that define you?
So, you know, it's difficult. You're asking a writer to just restrict herself to three words. So I think what I'm moving towards, and, you know, I do a lot of work on personal branding as well. And I think what I'm moving towards is confident, compassionate, and creative.
Okay. Three C's again.
The three C's again. Yeah.
Well done. Well said. So my next question to you would be that when was the first time?
Yeah.
Or rather, when was the last time you did something for the first time?
Yeah. So luckily for me, that's an easy one because I have a recent thing that I did. So 2 months ago, I went snorkeling in the Great Barrier Reef.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm not a good swimmer. In fact, I have rarely, you know, been in anything which is not a swimming pool, which is 4 feet deep. So to get into the vast ocean and do snorkeling, you know, beneath the ocean surface was a big thing for me.
I agree.
And I almost did not do it, but in the last minute, I kind of challenged myself and literally took the plunge. And it was a beautiful experience. In fact, I wrote an article about it as well. And just being there, looking at all the amazing coral reefs, which may not be there in a few years, with all that's happening in climate change. I think that was a fantastic experience. And I realized that, you know, I need to keep stepping out of my comfort zone by doing uncomfortable things more often.
That's wonderful. So my next question to you would be on failure, you know, and I ask this for virtually every guest I speak to. Indians particularly, and I think Asians in general, do not teach children that it's okay to fail. You know, we always keep hearing about come first. Come at the head of the class.
Correct.
And this manifests itself in our behavior, in traffic. My car must be right in front.
Yes.
A plane full of Indians lands. There's only one door, but everyone must get out first, etc. And yet we have all failed and we keep failing all the time. What are your learnings from some of your mistakes or some of your failures?
Yeah. So, you know, it just seems like a bit of a cliche, but it's true. Your failures teach you more than your successes.
Correct.
Right? right? So I think for me, one of the big things was, as I said, one of the times when I felt like a failure was when I, you know, quit my job thinking I'm unable to handle everything. And the learning from that was actually that it's okay. Sometimes failures are blessings in disguise. Right? And that has helped me to just pick myself up and go on.
Okay.
So, you know, in fact, every time, you know, I do business development, every time you don't get a yes from a client, in fact, it's a failure,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
it's a failure. And I face that on a daily basis. When you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to build a business and get more business for yourself, you're not going to be welcomed with open arms by everyone.
Correct.
So clients will stall you, they will, you know, your expectations will be raised and then it'll get dashed. I think for me, the important quality that I want to develop because of this is resilience. And I think I'm naturally blessed with an optimistic and positive outlook.
Okay.
So leveraging that and building resilience is, I think, what all the failures have taught me. And it's a cue to say, what do I need to do better?
Okay.
Right? And then come back and fix that. So one of the things I did not do in the past was building myself as a personal brand, especially as a writer. And, you know, people's memories are very short.
Correct.
And I think one of the things I made a mistake was not invest in building, you know, my brand as a writer or deciding what is it that I wanted out of my writing career. It was very ad hoc and impromptu. But it's been a learning. So now when I'm setting up Glow, making a conscious effort to invest in the branding aspect,
okay.
in the visibility aspect.
Okay.
So that is how the learning has helped me to plan better for the future.
That's wonderful. So I think I have time for one more question, and that's going to be the last. And this is really based on a lot of your experience, you know, and what your advice would be to a lot of young people watching you, your conversation with me today. You know, over the years, since you finished from Excel, you joined the corporate world, you went joined a startup, you know, you started your own company, you're an author, you're a coach. What would your advice be to someone young, all starry-eyed, looking up at you and saying, look at where she's reached? What would your advice be to the young person starting off on their journey?
Yeah, it's an interesting. Firstly, you know, as a coach, we kind of train not to give advice. So I'm kind of...
So that's why I'm asking you as Nirupma, as a person.
As a person. So I would say everybody has their own path. Have the confidence in yourself that you will find your path. And not be driven by external measures of success.
Correct.
Right? And that's one thing I have learned in these years is really have... No, say what it is that you want to do, which align with your values, what you're good at, and then have the courage to take that path.
Okay.
Right? Rather than be governed or guided by what you think the world expects you to do or what is the kind of person other people want you to be.
Wonderful. Rukma, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, and I wish you lots of success.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for the Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.